for all, but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about the transition of the Firebolt, boundaries, and the existence of souls. Welcome to episode 20 of First Years. Before we begin, I have some house points news. So, thank you so much to another podcast who wrote us a review. They're called The Book List. So they left a wonderful review, so they both get 10 points to Gryffindor, which makes our house points totals. Hufflepuff is in the lead with 45 points. Gryffindor is right behind them with 20. Slytherin has 15, and Ravenclaw has 5. So if you would like to change these stats, you are welcome to do so by participating in our different Instagram stories, participating in our Mindful Magic Mondays on Instagram, or rating and reviewing the podcast and leaving your name and Hogwarts house. We're also going to start having Instagram live chats. So our first one is tentatively set for the 14th, where we'll go over the differences between ghosts and poltergeists. And then our second one is tentatively set for the 28th, where we'll do a Patronus deep dive. So be sure to DM or email us your Patronus, and we'll go over the symbolism of your Patronus and what it means for you. So a lot of exciting things on Instagram coming your way, so be sure to be on the lookout for that. So in these two chapters, we start with Harry feeling betrayed and angry that no one has told him these details about Sirius Black and his parents before, which I fully understand. It has to be shocking and traumatic to hear that third hand from the adults at a table nearby. And now it makes sense why everyone has been trying to keep Harry safe and keep him out of Hogsmeade or anywhere where he might get into trouble. But a big part of these chapters is the Firebolt. And I had originally wanted to go over this last episode, but then I realized I couldn't really talk about the Firebolt until we got to the Firebolt chapter. So the Firebolt and the Nimbus 2000. So we talked about the loss of the Nimbus 2000 during Harry's Quidditch game, and the symbolism of it going crashing into the Whomping Willow, and it being a symbol of his father and his mother. But we have some more symbolism here that connect to that. So when we originally went over the Firebolt, when we were first introduced to it in Diagon Alley, it was connected with Poseidon and Thor. And so we have this moment in which Harry receives the Firebolt, and it's a very similar moment to when Harry gets the cloak in book one, but this time it's a broomstick. So let's review very quickly the Firebolt. So it is made of ash with birch twigs. So here's a quick rundown. Ash is a wand wood that tends to be stubborn and shouldn't be separated from their masters because they will lose their power, and their owners can be stubborn as well. Ash, in general, is a wood that's associated with protection, prosperity, and health. It represents the same kind of power that water has, and the same wood that Yggdrasil is made of in Viking mythology. Ash also attracts lightning, which we spoke about how funny that was in episode 15 because Harry was so drawn to it while he was staying in Diagon Alley. Odin and Thor possessed magical spears of ashwood, and it was a tree that's dear to Poseidon, and it has the reputation of being an effective talisman against drowning. Birch is also associated with Thor, and it's connected with protection and purification, growth, and stability. And so we spoke about how the Firebolt is probably a safe and stable broom to have and to be on. But I also want to point out a few more things here. It's associated with Thor and Poseidon. Thor being the god of thunder, and Poseidon being the god of the sea. And I find it really interesting that Harry effectively gains this broom during a storm. The reason the Firebolt shows up is because he loses his Nimbus while he's playing in a huge storm. So there's a direct connection to Thor there. And I know storms aren't quite the same as the sea, but the significance of water is definitely there, and I find that really interesting. And what's crazy here is that when we look into the symbolism of the Firebolt, it should be super safe. But the reason it gets taken away is because the adults don't think it is, because they believe it was sent by Sirius Black. So they're spending time making sure it's safe, even though the woods it's made of points to the fact that it probably is safe, which Harry already thinks it is, and which it does end up being. And we can't talk about the Firebolt without talking about Hermione. So she has some interesting plot points in these chapters. So she seems to trust the systems that are in place. Remember, we spoke about that last episode. She's begging Harry not to look for Sirius Black, saying that the Dementors will get him, so just let them handle it. She says, quote, "There's nothing you can do. The Dementors will catch Black, and he'll go back to Azkaban and serve him right." While Harry ends up countering with, quote, "You heard what Fudge says. Black isn't affected by Azkaban like normal people are. It's not a punishment for him like it is for the others." So we definitely see a testing of faith here like we spoke about last episode, where Hermione seems to still have full trust in it, but Harry is starting to maybe doubt it. Hermione doesn't trust the Firebolt when it arrives, and she tells McGonagall about it, and McGonagall confiscates it. And here we see her relationship with the boys start to falter. They're mad at her initially for turning in the Firebolt, which gets it taken away and stripped for dark magic. Which has me asking three questions. Why would Sirius Black send Harry Potter a broom? How would he know that he needed one? And what is involved in stripping down a broomstick? We've seen in this book before it being said that only powerful dark magic can interfere with a broomstick. So they must be pretty safe. Like, you probably can't easily mess with them. And it's making me wonder about what the rules are for professional Quidditch. Are there standards for brooms? How do you make sure that brooms haven't been jinxed or altered in any way? And if there was a process for that, like, they would need to make sure that it wouldn't affect the broom themselves and the magic that's within the brooms. And it would also need to be done in a timely manner. Like, if we're just thinking about it, you know, in general sports terms, like if we had a playoff, if we're thinking about this the way we would think about hockey, and we would need the brooms to be inspected before the playoffs started, it would need to be in a timely manner because there's not a lot of space between the end of a regular season and the beginning of the playoffs. But Harry's broomstick, it takes him over a month to get it back. And when Harry mentions to Oliver that they're stripping it down, he goes pale. So it must mean something. Or it must mean that there's a chance for something to go wrong with it as they do it. So what's the process of it? And as we're chatting about Hermione and the Firebolt and the consequences she faces because of it, I also want to chat a little bit about Hermione and boundaries. Because she doesn't seem to respect boundaries when it comes to Crookshanks. She brings him into the boys' dorm, she brushes Ron's worries off about Scabbers, gets mad when Ron gets mad that Crookshanks goes after Scabbers. And I fully agree that Ron should not be trying to kick Crookshanks. You should not be harming or hitting your animals in any way. But Hermione also should not be bringing her cat around to her friend who already doesn't like her cat and who owns a rat that the cat has been after since they have met. So the common room is fair game, but I don't think the boys' dormitory is. And that comes back into play at the end of these chapters, when the boys are just about to make up with Hermione, when it seems that Crookshanks finally got Scabbers. And I have to say, there's some really good cliffhangers in this book that we've seen so far. Also, during these chapters, we find out the consequences of the incident between Draco and the hippogriff Buckbeak. So there's going to be a hearing, and it's a hearing with a committee called the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. And Hagrid says that they've got it in for interesting creatures, and they're all in Lucius Malfoy's pocket. So we learn a few things about the wizarding world here. While I am sure that there are rich half-bloods and muggleborns, we get the real image of purebloods being at the top of wizarding society. Lucius Malfoy was a governor of the school. He has the committee and it seems parts of the ministry in his pocket. He has incredible influence. So what exactly are the roles that purebloods have in this world? Because if we have Lucius as like the symbol of most of these pureblood families, he's able to exert a lot of influence within the ministry because of the money that he has. And as the children dive into different magical creatures cases to try and help Hagrid with his hearing, we find out that this committee has a serious bias against magical creatures, and they seem to always find the creature guilty in the cases that are brought up to them. So what sort of biases are there then in the wizarding world that we can sort of infer here? In these chapters, we also get more information about the Dementors through Hagrid and through Lupin. So Hagrid talks about how when you're around the Dementors and you're in Azkaban, you can't remember who you are, can't see the point in living, and it doesn't matter if you're innocent or not to the Dementors, as long as they have you and they can feed off of your soul. We learn that the Dementor's kiss is something where the Dementors suck the soul out of somebody. And we have this interesting moment where Harry says that Sirius Black deserves getting a Dementor's kiss. And Lupin questions that and asks, does anybody really deserve that? So what does that say about the wizarding world that the prisons are like this? That the people who run the prisons don't care if you are innocent or not. And the fact that this kind of punishment actually exists, where you take somebody's soul out and they're still alive, but everything that makes them them is gone. And I also want to pose the question of, what does it mean for this book series that souls exist? Like, I'm not sure that you need to be religious specifically in order to believe in souls, but they do tend to be connected. So what does this say about the wizarding world? We don't really have discussions about gods in these books, but we do have Christmas and Easter break. So what do we think that means in a magical world? Harry also spends time with Professor Lupin in these chapters, learning a Patronus charm. But before we get into that, there's something odd going on around Lupin. So he was sick, but Ron says he wasn't in the hospital wing. So where was he? And Hermione seems to have figured something out about Lupin, but she won't tell Harry or Ron about it because they're in the middle of a fight. But she says, oh, isn't it obvious? So what do you think we're missing here? What do you think she's figured out? We learn that the Patronus charm is a guardian that acts as a shield between you and the Dementor. And the basis of it is a happy memory. And we see Harry start to learn this. But we also see that we see Harry start to make progress on this very difficult spell. But we also see that's not the only way to sort of deal with Dementors. Because after trying to learn the Patronus charm and after dealing with the Dementors on the train, Harry is given chocolate. So this is an interesting thing, that chocolate is the way to shake off the Dementors after dealing with them, instead of like a potion of some kind. I think many of us can relate to eating chocolate when we're feeling down. I know I can. And so I wonder if it has something to do with that concept. There are many studies about the benefits of dark chocolate, like antioxidants, lowering blood pressure, things like that. I'm sure you've heard about those, so I don't need to do a deep dive on chocolate here. But I think it's interesting to think about because, especially when you look at how stress can increase your blood pressure, which I would say being around a Dementor definitely is stressful, and how chocolate can reduce that, it's an interesting thing to sort of start thinking about. So is it scientific? Is it emotional? Is it both? What do you think? We also get more bombshells about Harry's parents. We find out that Lupin knew James Potter and that they were friends at Hogwarts, which in this moment of teaching Harry the Patronus charm, it must just be so bizarre and disturbing to know that Harry is hearing James's last moments. Like, regardless of how close Lupin and James were, we don't really know. But just knowing that someone you knew is gone, and then knowing that somebody has, memory is not the right word, but knowing that somebody knows what their last moments were has got to be disturbing. We also find out that Lupin knew Sirius Black, and he actually says, quote, "Yes, I knew him, or I thought I did." So there's history there. And it seems that maybe Sirius wasn't always bad, or at least he fooled everybody. Because especially when we think about what Madame Rose Murda said in the previous chapters about how she was shocked that Sirius turned to the dark side because she never would have thought about it in a million years. It seems like he's really fooled everybody when he was younger, which gives us even more of an insight into his character, where Lupin says, "Yeah, I knew him, or I thought I did." It's the same sort of thought process between Madame Rose Murda and Lupin in this moment, where she's like, "No, if you had told me years ago that Sirius Black was going to, you know, be on the dark side, I would have thought you were way too drunk and just talking crazy." So it's very interesting to think about. I also just have a couple more little things that I absolutely loved in these chapters. Some of the Christmas chapters are my favorite. So I love the moment of Dumbledore pulling open a Christmas cracker with Snape. It is the best visual I have ever read. Also, I want to say that Professor Trelawney joins them at Christmas dinner, and she talks about the 13 at the table, which we did go over in a previous episode when we talked about divination. So that's a real thing from folklore that's present in this, where if 13 sit down at a table, the first one to rise will be the first to die, which I thought was really interesting. And there's a detail in this about an odd portrait party between Sir Cadogan, a few monks, and a few previous headmasters of Hogwarts. And that just sounds like such a fun and bizarre grouping of people. Like, I know in our previous episode, my guest Steven spoke about how the group in the Three Broomsticks was very odd. I would also say this group is definitely odd to be hanging out as well. Let us know your thoughts at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Twitter or Instagram at firstyearspod. We have plenty of opportunities to win house points. Every Monday, we have a Mindful Magic Monday where I will pose a question. And if you answer it, does not have to be right. It's going to be a thought-provoking question. If you answer it in some form and tell me your house, you will win house points. If you also rate and review the podcast and leave your name in your Hogwarts house, you will also get house points. And I'll probably give house points away to anybody who tunes into our Instagram lives. So be on the lookout for that. I have the 2 tentative dates. I will let you know if they change, and I will let you know exactly what time they will be on Instagram. Keep an eye open also for our Instagram stories. We like to offer house points opportunities on there as well. Thank you again to the Booklist Pod for reviewing our podcast. So you guys earned 20 points to Gryffindor. For next episode, you need to read chapters 13 and 14. And I will see you guys next time. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeyer. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are are committed to continue.